Thank you all so much for joining me here this evening. I'm back for another sampling of spine-tingling stories, spooky stories, and true stories. Stories about monsters, creatures, ghosts, ghouls and goblins, strange lights in the sky, and unusual sounds in our streets. Tales of deathbed visitations, demonic entities, and even unusual children. So let's not waste another second. Let's get this episode rolling. And to start us off, we venture to the state of California. The city of Bakersfield, specifically. Home of Buck Owens, Merle Haggard, and more oil rigs than you can shake a dipstick at. So please welcome this anonymous caller to tonight's program.
Hi, Derek. Love the podcast. Love everything you do. This is another creepy nighttime story from Bakersfield, California. So this was maybe 2013, maybe 2014, and my friend and I were staying up late, hanging out in the backyard, just doing normal early 20s behavior kind of stuff. You know, this was back when we could stay up super, super late and not pay for it the next day. So it was maybe, I don't know, 3-4 o'clock in the morning, probably fall. Not that it ever gets very cold in Bakersfield, but you know, it was fairly cold. And we're sitting outside and, you know, everything is dead quiet. Now, I used to live on the outskirts of town, and so it was super quiet out there. I mean, all you could hear was the distant highway noise, and, you know, nobody's out at 3 o'clock in the morning. And all of a sudden, we're sitting there, and we start hearing this noise. And it's really hard to describe, but this noise, it grew in volume. And it was the biggest noise that I'd ever heard. And that sounds silly, but that's the best way that I can describe it. I mean, it was huge. And, you know, after a couple seconds of just sitting there processing it, you know, I look out. We had trees lining the property. And we see birds flying out of the tree. So I was living at my mom's. She had like 4 cats. And some of these cats were outside, inside, whatever. So the cats they were like 2 cats outside. They're running wild. Like, you know, where cats kind of like hunker their body weight down to the ground and look around, you know, and they get all big like they're being threatened. So they're doing that. There's birds flying out of the trees. So me and my friend, we get up. I get up out of my chair almost instinctively, and I go to look towards the night sky because I was convinced that it was like a nuclear bomb or something, that we must have been able to see some light in the sky, and there's nothing, just the stars ahead. And the sound keeps growing. And I thought when it was at its peak that the glass in the windows was going to shatter. That's how loud the sound was, but it wasn't even so much loud as it was big. I mean, like, not a sonic boom. I've heard those time and time again, like, you know, the big airplanes flying over. No, this was like, it sounded like something was football field wide passing over our head. That's what the sound sounded like. And we were almost in the eye of a storm or something when the sound got the loudest. Like, no light in the sky, nothing. There wasn't a big explosion, nothing like that. And the sound goes on, like, and it rises up to, like, the peak sound. Then it starts decreasing in volume. And we just can't for the life of us figure out what this is. We figure everybody in the neighborhood has to be awake because this is the loudest, craziest thing we've ever heard. And, I mean, I had just chills all over me. And then the sound starts to decrease. And then by the time it decreases all the way or close to all the way, all of the dogs and the coyotes and everything else around that area starts going crazy once the sound stops, like absolutely nuts. Every dog within a 10-mile radius, we could hear barking. And, you know, the coyotes howling, and the bugs started chirping again, the crickets. And I didn't even realize until that moment that the bugs had stopped chirping. And, you know, I know that it's crazy. I mean, we looked into it. We tried to find answers the next day. We couldn't find anything. And people ask, you know, like, if you could meet God, what would you ask him or something? That is in my top three. What the heck was that sound? I mean, for the life of me, can't figure it out. Never had any good answer to it. And I wasn't by myself. I mean, my friend remembers it just the way that I do. And I asked my parents about it the next day. They didn't even wake up. And I swear, this sound sounded loud enough to break glass. I mean, there's a reason why when we first started hearing this sound, I thought, bomb. I mean, it was the biggest sound I've ever heard in my life, if that makes any sense. You know, I know a gunshot sound, like, I know stuff like that. Like, this was nothing like that. Not an airplane. I mean, there's Edwards Air Force bases out there. Like, I've even heard their planes and fighter jets and stuff like that. This was not that. And like I said, when we looked up at the sky, we couldn't see anything but the stars. And when we looked out on the skyline or, you know, out on the horizon, couldn't see a darn thing. It sounded like a gigantic ship or something that we couldn't hear was passing overhead. And that's my second Bakersfield crazy story that I've shared on the air. I swear, crazy freaking things happen in Bakersfield, California. And yeah, I've since moved away from there, but I've got a couple more stories to share. Anyway, thank you so much for the podcast, and thank you. Bye.
Thanks, caller. Well, you know, I'd be lying if I said this isn't the first time we'd heard a story like this. Because we've heard plenty. Strange sounds booming across an entire town or city, with no known source or origin. There's even a few names for this phenomena swirling around out there. Skyquakes, they call them, though many have regional names. The Taos Hum or the Seneca Guns of New York, for example. And you know, not all skyquakes are considered equal. Some are louder than others. Some last longer. Some are simply a boom, like that of an explosion. While others, like our callers here, are more like rumbling sounds, like thunder that just doesn't quit. Now, you know, I'm pretty familiar with the town of Bakersfield. I've been there countless times, mostly on my way to one of my favorite places here in Southern California, nearby Kernville, a little river town that I've undoubtedly discussed previously. But despite my familiarity with the area, I was not aware of any existing legends about loud sounds emanating from thin air. So I did some digging. And as it turns out, this sort of activity has happened before in this location. Several times, in fact. The following is just one of many news stories available about this Bakersfield boom. Courtesy of KGET, NBC News 17, out of Bakersfield.
These doorbell camera videos were posted to the Neighbors app last week, showing a flash of light and a loud booming sound. We've also seen reports of this across social media platforms, and I can tell you from personal experience, my neighborhood is rocked with these nightly explosions on almost a weekly basis, and these are not explosions from your garden variety fireworks. We checked in with the Bakersfield Police Department and the Kern County Sheriff's Office, but authorities tell us they are not currently working on any criminal complaints about this. It is not clear tonight what or who is causing them.
Now, this particular clip also shared recorded audio of one of these mysterious booms. Here's a sample repeated 3 times, recorded by a doorbell camera there in town. Now, if that's even half the experience that our caller had, I now understand her concern. But if I'm honest, what our caller described does not sound like what was recorded here, nor what's been reported over the years. Most of those reports seem to describe singular explosions, while our caller seemed to describe a low rumbling sound, as if an unimaginably large craft was lumbering by. So perhaps we're discussing two different things here. Well, as I'd mentioned a bit ago, I spend a lot of time in nearby Kernville, a small town about 50 miles to the east, up in the mountains there. And while I'm there, I almost always catch fighter jets barreling through the canyons. F-22s, I believe, coming out of Edwards Air Force Base, which is only about 100 miles or so to the southeast of there, and some 80 miles east of Bakersfield. Now, yes, I realize our caller mentioned that she's familiar with these flyovers and the sounds that they produce, especially while traveling at supersonic speeds, but I couldn't help but think that this activity didn't somehow have something to do with that military connection. Then I found the following news story, also out of KGET.
Did you hear it? We received multiple calls this morning from people who heard a large explosion in the skies above Bakersfield. Theories abound about the cause of the large booming sound, but we can confirm tonight that it was nothing out of this world. Edwards Air Force Base says the noises were, in fact, sonic booms from jets making test flights from the base. Officials tell us that the aircraft fly above 30,000 feet in airspace specifically used for testing supersonic flight and typically wouldn't be heard in Bakersfield, but our uncommon weather this week provided the perfect conditions for the sound to travel across eastern Kern all the way to Bakersfield. And here's our chief meteorologist, Alyssa Carlson. Alyssa, why were we able to hear that?
Well, for one thing, Moses, we did have clear conditions, and the winds helped sound to travel. So it was coming from Edwards Air Force Base, and with winds then coming here out of the south and east and then back into Kern County and into the Bakersfield area specifically, that sound just kind of traveled here into the valleys.
So that explains it, right? Sonic booms, or engine noise in general, drifting the 80 miles across the desert to the Bakersfield area. Well, not so fast, my friend. Although that could be the case, I did manage to find one report issued to the National UFO Reporting Center that seems to describe the exact same thing that our caller did. The following brief encounter occurred on November 24th, 2013, at about 4 p.m. there in the town of Bakersfield. I saw a white triangular object with metallic red at the apex. It was very loud and was traveling north. Now, coincidentally, there are dozens of similar reports to come out of that area, although this is the only one I could find that mentioned any sounds associated with the sighting. And I've linked to all those other reports in the show notes, so you can contrast and compare yourself. Maybe you're able to uncover something that I wasn't. Either way, it seems like the skies above this California town are abuzz with something. So next time you find yourself there, look up and see if you can't witness some of this activity yourself. Whatever the cause. And thanks again, caller, for sharing the story. Now, folks, if you too have a tale to tell, a true tale, call our hotline at 1-888-608-NIGHT. That's 888-608-NIGHT. Or record your story on your phone and shoot me the file at monstersamonguspodcast@gmail.com. And folks, I hate to be picky about these submissions, but please keep it to one story per call, unless the stories are somehow related. I have a lot of folks calling in 3 or 4 stories in one phone call. And truth be told, that's a nightmare for me, editing-wise. So in the interest of preserving my sanity and getting your story on the air, please do what you can to keep it to one story per call. Of course, you can always call back as much as you want. Just keep them separated. Now, the subject of this next entry also terrorizes the skies, but it does so in an entirely different manner. Please welcome Albert, all the way from Texas.
Hey, Derek. My name is Albert. I live here in San Antonio, Texas. My story is kind of like a segue from a story that you had on one of your recent episodes with a guy claiming that he saw a lechuza out here in Texas. It sounded like a barn owl to me as well, but, you know, and when you're at night, anything can take over with your eyes and your senses. And anyhow, my story takes place with the same kind of creature, but only a little more sinister. Me and my wife, in late 2014, were heading out for a late-night snack. She was about 6 or 7 months pregnant, and we were leaving her mom's house, who lives adjacent to us. We do live on 8 acres of land, and behind us is like 10,000 acres of land, so go figure with the creepiness in that. And anyhow, I'm in the car, starting the car. It's kind of chilly outside, so I'm starting my vehicle up. We park about 60, 70 feet away from the house, so it's a little bit of a dark path walk to the car next to a tree, but she's used to it. We're used to living out there. Nothing really bothered us. She was walking to the car, and she heard her mom's voice calling her from the woods. Very clearly, very much like her mom, on the way walking to my vehicle, she heard her mom calling her a few times to come to the woods, to come to me. And she stopped. My wife stopped in her tracks and turned around and went back inside. And she went up to her mom and was like, "Did you just call me?" And she was like, "No, I've been here watching TV." So my wife was like kind of dumbfounded. She was like, "Huh, okay." Didn't think anything of it. So she's like, "Okay, we'll be back." She takes off back to outside, going down the steps, and right when she's about to walk down her last step of the patio, she hears her mom's voice call her again. And it was a little more persistent and insistent on her coming to meet her in the woods. And then these woods are dark and freaky as heck. And so she stopped, and she came directly to my vehicle. Mind you, these things about lechuzas, they are the Mexican folklore. And the story is that there are witches who sold their souls and trade for power, all kinds of malevolent things that these evil witches do. And the trade-off is that they are able to transform into these huge, ugly humanoid owls. And they love to stalk the blood of the innocent. And they have been, at least in stories, known to take babies and then be around pregnant women who are expecting because they want the innocent blood of a baby, a newborn. And they will do anything to get it. I have another story like this as well, continuation. Months later, after she had our daughter, we got a new mobile home adjacent to her mom on the same land. And her son got his own room. And one night, I wake up to the latch shaking on the door, the back door, the entrance door. And I got up real quick, and us Texans were all armed. You know, and I'm looking for my phone, but I'm trying to figure out which one to open the door. And I get up real quick, and I open my door, and her son, it's 2 or 3 in the morning, mind you, in the middle of the night, another cold night. 2 or 3 in the morning, her son is at the door trying to exit the house, dressed up in all his school clothes with his backpack. And I'm like, "What are you doing, man?" And he is like, "I heard my mommy calling me outside from my window saying to get dressed. Come meet me outside to go ride the bus to Dalvin and take you to your school bus. Get dressed, come outside. Go outside right now." And, you know, he was explaining that this thing was insisting that it was his mother, and it sounded just like his mom. and he was about to leave the house, and it freaked us all out bad. And to this day, we don't know what it was, but we insist that it was some form of lechuza or a very bad spirit. Anyhow, I hope you guys enjoy that creepy story. I like the show. I'm a new listener. Thank you.
Thanks, Albert. Now that's one paranormal figure that really seems to have people shaken, especially here in the American Southwest, in Texas, and places south of that. Lechuza. She's certainly a creepy construct. And I promise we'll hear more from her soon, but on a future episode. For now, thank you again, Albert, for priming us for the full Lechuza experience. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. The holiday season can be a lot. Stressful travel, worrying about gift-giving, loneliness, and a lot more that can weigh heavy on all of us this time of year. Now, I'm no stranger to the seasonal blues, and I want you to know that if you're suffering, you're not alone. Adding something new and positive to your life, like therapy, can help counteract some of those sad or anxious feelings. It can be something to look forward to, make you feel more grounded, and it could give you the tools you need to manage difficult emotions in the future. Now, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, which makes it convenient, flexible, and affordable. And if for some reason you're not vibing with the therapist you're matched with, well, you can switch at any time for no additional charge. Find your bright spot this season with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/monsters among us to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/monsters among us. Now, as always, supporting our sponsors supports the show. So thank you for listening. Now back to this cow that died of mysterious circumstances. Now, this next entry originates from a state we don't hear from all that often. David, from Connecticut, welcome to the program.
Hey, Derek, this is David from Connecticut. I called a couple of times. I was thinking about this. It's not my story, it's my father's, but I have a little bit to do with it. He was 52 when he gave birth to me and my twin. So he was always older man. When I was about 21, he got sick. He had brain cancer, lung cancer, and emphysema. He had the brain cancer removed. And when he got home after however long in the hospital, he was just different. There was a different look in his eyes. It just wasn't my same father. He was more aggressive, a little more quick to snap and get angry. But anyways, he started telling us that he would see a little girl out the corner of his eye when he would wake up every morning at 6 a.m. Since I was alive, he woke up that early. And he kept seeing her out the corner of his eye. And when he would sit in his recliner and watch TV, the same thing. The little girl my dad saw had a blue flower dress on. It was long. She had blonde hair. My father never had a daughter. There was never little girls. My mother had me, my twin brother, an older brother, and a little brother. So I don't know why he would see a little girl, but he wasn't afraid of her. It was peaceful. Every time he would turn his head to look at her, she would run behind the wall or run down the hall. And we would come over every weekend. And I said, Dad, do you see her now? And he would say, yeah. And I would walk up to the area. He would say, as soon as you go over there, she runs. And I would say, Dad, you're telling the story. And my father would get so angry when you called him a liar. Or if he had to repeat himself. Or if you talked over him. These are things he didn't do with my father. So he was very not like, we would never talk about ghosts. I'd never heard him talk about anything like this my whole life. But I believed it, you know. And then about a week later, it was the weekend. We always go over there early. And it was around 9, but I was running late because I went to a Quonset hut to pick up a Carhartt jacket for work. And at the very end, I was cashing out, and I decided to buy a keychain, which resembled like a 22-gun bullet keychain, kind of a bigger bullet.
So that day we were late to go over to see my father, and it was all dark. All this shade was down. That never happens at 9 a.m. The doors are locked, and my aunt pulls in. I've been trying to call your dad, and she has a key. We walk in. He had a heart attack that morning because he was very stiff. I'm the one that had to pull him over. His face was black. His eyes were like a clear blue. You can tell his soul was gone. My father was gone. It wasn't him anymore. Very cold and stiff. But the week later, when we put him in the ground, my father was in the Korean War, and they did a 21-gun salute. And after they did that, one of the guys who shot off the gun came over and put something in my hand. It was the same bullet that I bought from the Quonset hunt the morning of my dad's death. And it's just a coincidence, but I figured it's a pretty cool story. I always tell it. This was in 2004. My father was 72 when he died. All right, thank you.
Thank you, David. Ooh, that's eerie. Now, maybe it was a coincidence. Maybe it was a sign. Whatever it was, it made my hair stand on end. So thank you again, David, for sharing those experiences. I'll say I'm sorry for your loss. Now, folks, don't forget to visit our shop to pick up a gift for that MAU fan in your life. Go to monstersamonguspodcast.com and click the shop tab to access all sorts of goodies. From t-shirts to caps, from pins and patches to stickers and posters. And if you order now, there's still plenty of time to get it before the holidays. Again, that's monstersamonguspodcast.com and click the shop tab. Now, folks, a while back I made a mention that I'd never heard a Shadow Man or a Hat Man story in which the entity spoke. Well, since then, I've received a number of entries to the contrary. Just like this one, from Kevin, down in Louisiana.
Hi, Derek. This is Kevin from Louisiana. When I was growing up at my parents' house, I was about maybe 5 or 6. I assumed to be the Hat Man when I seen him several times when I was growing up. Well, the way my parents' house was set up in my room, I was laying in my bed, and I had a clear shot of our living room. Well, something woke me up during the night. I woke up, and I see the Hat Man standing there. So I, you know, freaked out, went and told my parents. They just brushed it off like nothing happened. So I went back to bed. About a week or two goes by, I see him again. Same situation, he's looking at me from the living room. So, you know, do the same thing, tell my parents, they just brush it off. Okay. The night after that, same situation again, but this time he's looking at me, and all I remember is him just pointing at me and saying, "You." I've never heard any of the, you know, on your podcast, I've been binging them for about a month now. And all the Hat Man encounters I've heard, I've never heard any of them saying he said anything. Now, I don't know what it meant when he said you, but I don't know. To this day, it still kind of freaks me out. My parents, I told them about it, and they were like, "You know, you were just seeing things. Use your imagination." Well, no. And I don't know. I haven't witnessed it anymore. It was when I was younger, you know, and I haven't seen anything since. So appreciate your podcast. It keeps me awake while I'm driving for work. And yeah, just keep it going. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Kevin. I guess I stand corrected. And we thought they were creepy before they started talking. And I don't normally say this, but better you than me, Kevin. That does not sound like a fun experience. But we do thank you for taking the time to share it. I think I have time to sneak one more call in before we hit our next scheduled break. And I've selected one I really think you're going to enjoy. Out of the state of Texas, Please join me in welcoming Sam to tonight's program.
Yeah, hi, Derek. I'm Sam from San Antonio, and I'm actually calling you about a wide-eyed kid experience. I was listening to your podcast, and I came across an episode where, I believe Dan was his name, mentioned it, and it was weird because I had an experience actually not too long ago, and thought I would share it with you guys. So here in Texas, we actually had a cold front come through not too long ago. I mean, it was here for about a week. And I forgot what day of the week it was at this point. I was on my way home, and I got gotten off work early, and I'm like, okay, fun. I get to go do run errands. And I was at the grocery store, actually. And I was returning to my car, and I kind of parked further to the back so there wasn't as many people around. So I'm getting to my car, and then I saw this kid just walking around with, it looked like shorts and a t-shirt. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. It's kind of cold. Okay. I didn't think anything of it, and I kind of just continued in my car. And then I put my groceries away, and I get in my car, and I'm getting ready to leave. And all of a sudden, I hear a tap on my window, and I look up, and I see this kid. I'm like, oh, okay. And I roll down the window. I'm like, yeah, hi, can I help you? And he was like, yeah, I'm lost. Could you give me a ride home, please? And I'm like, sure. But as I was saying that, I'm kind of like looking this kid over, and I felt this really, felt really weird. I didn't feel scared, more just weird. And then I noticed his eyes, and they were, I'm not sure how to other describe them than just like solid white balls, if that makes any sense. But I'm staring at him, and I'm like, yeah, sure, okay. Okay, and I'm not sure how to really explain it, but it kind of, he didn't have any pupils or irises, but it kind of looked like he noticed I was staring at his eyes, and he didn't say anything for a few seconds, and I'm like, yeah, okay. And then all of a sudden, I get this weird sensation where, you know, when you're kind of like really lost in thought, and all of a sudden you're like spaced out, and all of a sudden you come to it and you're like, oh, what the heck. So that happened, and what was it, I was actually driving, and I'm like, okay, I'm not sure if you're familiar with San Antonio, but if you look at San Antonio on a map, it's kind of in the shape of a giant ring. And where I was at, I was driving on the bigger ring coming back from an area of town that I don't actually go to very often. So I'm like, oh, okay, how did I get here? When I had gone grocery shopping, it was about, let's see, 11 or so. And then I'm looking at my clock again in my car, and it's about 2 in the afternoon. I'm like, that's really weird. I don't remember why I'm over here. And I'm like trying to figure out, oh, okay, that's kind of weird. And then I get a call from my husband. He's like, hey, where are you? And I'm like, oh, I'm on the freeway headed home, I think. And he's like, oh, no. Yeah, you told me you were coming home about 12:30 and you'd make it home. I'm like, oh, yeah, no. Sorry. And he's like, yeah, I've been calling you, and you just wouldn't pick up. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm on my way home now. I'm like, okay. And I put down my phone, and I'm like, sure enough, I have a few missed calls. I'm like, that's really, really odd. Okay. So that's kind of what happened a few weeks ago. I've been kind of sitting on this just like wondering, since I know of black-eyed kids, but I'd never really heard of white-eyed kids before, so I was like, oh, that's weird. And I haven't really found too much online. I did come across that urban legend, but yeah, nothing really too solid. Anyhow, yeah, I thought I'd share that with you guys, and look forward to this upcoming season, and stay safe out there, guys. Thanks.
Did you hear that? There was some sort of strange interference on Sam's call. Now, usually I don't bring attention to these sorts of things. In fact, I often edit them out, because glitches happen, and I typically don't see them as something paranormal. But this glitch was strange. Now, I've been doing this for a long time, and this is the first time I've ever heard that particular sound in a call. And of course, it had to happen during a white-eyed kid story. Now, I'm not saying it's paranormal, but I am saying that it's strange. Now, in Sam's call, I actually dropped the volume of that interference substantially. It was very loud. And I also isolated the oddity. And here it is again, real quick. What do you think? Anyway, thank you, Sam, for calling in. Now, we've all heard of the black-eyed children, menacing, childlike figures that are typically encountered trying to persuade innocent victims to let them in their car or home. Now, I guess we have to contend with creepy kids with white eyes as well. And that visual kind of reminds me of something.
Science fiction has never imagined so strange or terrifying a story as that of the village of Midwich, England, cut off from life as we know it by some mysterious force. And later, at one and the same time, a child was born to every woman in the village. Children that grew to look like this. Beautiful youngsters behind whose fiery, hypnotic eyes lurked the demon forces of another world.
They're not human. They ought to be destroyed.
Forces put to such sinister use that it became a national emergency. Today, their control reaches out into space. Tomorrow, will it girdle the globe?
There's nothing you can do to stop us. Leave us alone.
Now, for anyone that's seen the 1960 film Village of the Damned, or its 1995 remake, might find this description familiar. The children in either film, if that's what you want to call them, had glowing white eyes. That remake really gave me chills when I was younger. There's just something about that visual. Anyway, so Delaney and I did some digging on the subject, and to our surprise, there was a lot more information on these creepy kids than we first thought. But first, I feel it's my duty as a hopeful skeptic to share with you all the facts. And the fact is, there is a condition called leucophoria that can cause one's pupil to turn white instead of black. The word leucophoria actually means white pupil, and can occur in adults, but is much more common in children. Though it's my understanding that the disorder is cause for alarm and can point to other underlying conditions. In other words, if that is what was wrong with the child that Sam met that evening, I think he needed a ride to the emergency room, if anywhere. But let's be realistic. That's probably not going to explain this story away. It all sounds much more sinister than that. Especially when you hear what Delaney uncovered, courtesy of Woodward TV, over at YouTube.
The eyes, of course, are the obvious difference between the white-eyed kids and black-eyed kids. The black-eyed children are known for showing up at people's houses, knocking on the doors and windows, harassing people to let them inside. The white-eyed children are also known for knocking on house doors, but also car windows, and unlike the black-eyed children, they do not need permission to enter a home. Instead, they can just teleport themselves inside, as teleportation is one of their attributes. The white-eyed kids are also usually only spotted in secluded, wooded areas. Once they enter the home, they are said to just stare at their victims, in an attempt to either brainwash or hypnotize them. These beings, emotionless, are extremely powerful telepaths. They communicate to their witnesses with a type of mind control. The witness never really feels anything odd when this is happening until the child either disappears or until they see their eyes. And when they are seen, it is often followed by the death of someone that the witness knows, or even the death of the witness themselves.
Now, he has a whole video on the subject over there if you'd like to expand your horizons. The link can be found in the show notes. But from what I gather, these white-eyed kids are somehow in control of the black-eyed kids. Well, frankly, I'm not sure where all this lore is coming from. But some of what was shared in that video does check out with Sam's story. Sam didn't seem to grant the child permission to enter her car, but it seemed like he did anyway. Or at the very least, was able to convince her to drive miles out of her way. I can only assume, by using mental telepathy, another trait that this entity is said to have. Now, in digging for info, I did stumble across another first-hand account that I thought sounded a lot like Sam's. So from the website Phantoms and Monsters, the following was posted on August 11th of this year. I was in a 24-hour shopping center car park waiting for a friend who works there at around 10 p.m. Suddenly, a kid pops out of the window screen and starts tapping. I'm thinking, where the hell did he come from? And is he trying to rob me? Anyway, I roll the window down only partially and remember that my doors are locked, so I feel a little bit safer. I ask the kid, what do you want? Sir, I'm lost. Can you take me home? I ask, where are your parents? As it was late in the night and there was no one else visible on the same floor I was waiting on. This was starting to feel a bit off. I'm lost and I just want to go home, he replied. This was definitely weird. I looked at him again. Then I did a double take. Oh my God. His eyes were white. Not just white around the edges, but unending white through the entire eye. No iris, no pupil, just a solid wall of light. I really don't know why, but I felt myself smiling slightly as I gazed at him. Then my thoughts began to collect again. It must have been 3 seconds. Sorry, kid, I have to go. I immediately regretted replying. But you have to take me, the kid replied. I don't know how, but I could feel his voice more than hear it. His words began echoing in my mind, longer than it should have. No, kid, I have to go. I started panicking. The kid replied again, this time with something indescribable behind his voice. I'm lost, and I just want to go home. I don't know how, but at this point it was as if someone put this kid's voice on a loudspeaker, and as he spoke, I felt as if a booming was resonating from within the kid. The force of the kid's voice was so strong, I felt strongly sympathetic to him, almost like I was being forced to. Anyway, with the last ounce of control I had left, I turned the car on and slammed on the accelerator. The kid immediately shouted out, "Now, take me with you." At this point, it was as though the kid's voice was a machine gun firing into me. I immediately sped to the nearest exit in a dreamlike state and drove into the night. Black eyes or white eyes? I suppose all cats are gray in the night. It's not something you want to encounter either way. And we thank you, Sam, for bringing this subject to our attention. I think maybe I heard a story or two over the years like this one, but this is the first time we've ever done a serious deep dive into the subject. We sure do appreciate that opportunity. Well, coincidentally, this next entry keeps us in the state of Texas. We've heard a lot from the Lone Star State this evening. But this time, the story comes to us anonymously.
Hello, I am from Dallas, Texas, but I would like to remain anonymous. So, in my family, we're very religious, and we also are very aware of spirits. And my Mexican side of my family, from San Luis Potosí, Mexico, is very, very knowing that there are spirits, there are demons, and I believe in it because I'm a devout Catholic. But I do remember when I was around 14 or maybe 13 years old going to Mexico, and one night, I think it was like a Thursday, maybe a Friday, but I went to use the restroom because we didn't have indoor plumbing. We had to go outside to use the restroom. But I just see this dark figure, a very, very dark figure standing on the wall. We didn't have fences. There's no fence. It's literally a complete cement block wall with glass on top as like our barbed wire. And I'm looking at it thinking, is he not hurt? Is he not bleeding from his feet? Our dog was actually going crazy right there in front of the gate. And it just stood there. And I was just in the doorway, ready to use the restroom. And for a good solid minute and a half, maybe even longer, because when I was looking at it, my heart was pounding. I never felt so much dread, so much eeriness, so much fear going through my body at that time than ever before. And it just made me feel super uneasy. So I went back inside, closed the door, locked it, and just stared out the window. Just stared at him. Just stared at him, her, whatever. It just stayed there. And my room is right next to the front door, so there was a window. And we had curtains there the entire time, so we were good. But I remember distinctly waking up to check. And then I peeked a little bit through the window, and I just see the shadow figure peeking his head over the wall. Like, he just climbed down on the other side of the wall to the street, just peeking over. Dog still barking. He knew that something or someone was still there, and he just wanted him to get away from this. I told my grandparents about it, because I usually go with my grandparents, and there you were like, oh, we've had sightings of an entity like that here, but it doesn't really do anything. Just stands on the wall. Stands and peeks over. And it really just set a wrong tone about me. Hopefully you can do some research about that. Maybe you can come up with something that explains what I'm thinking of what it is. All I saw was just a shadow. I love your podcast. I love it. Continue to listen to it. And I'm glad that you're here. It helps a lot whenever I go to bed or I'm at work. Just keep up the good work. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for the phone call. Now, I think our caller mentioned that there was glass protruding from the concrete on the top of the block wall, essentially making it a giant saw blade. And I'm sure it's hell on the feet of the local raccoon and cat population. Do they have raccoons in Mexico? Anyway, I'm getting off topic. The point here is that whoever, or whatever this thing was, it shouldn't have been able to stand on that wall, covered in broken glass. In theory, their feet would be ripped to shreds. Which begs the question, what the hell was up there? And how did it do it? And to throw in rumors of a local entity that lurks the walls of the village, that certainly lends some sort of credence. But, truth be told, caller, I have no additional information for you. But what I can do is open this up to the listeners. If you have any additional information on this story, maybe a suspect we can look at, shoot me an email or something. Get a hold of me. And until then, I'll keep my ears open, caller. And thanks again for sharing the entry. Now that brings us to tonight's final story. And what a doozy this one is, out of the state of Ohio, by way of Joan, from from down in Florida.
Hi, my name's Joan, and I'm originally from a small area in Ohio called Galena, Sunbury, Ohio. But at the time, I was 5'6", so this is back. I was born in 1963, so this was about 1968, 69. I live in Florida now, but my story comes from Columbus, Ohio. My grandmother lived in Columbus, Ohio, and she would watch me during the day. I was about 5-6 years old. It was summer, so we were home. I was not in school. And my grandmother had kind of one of those old school houses that was attached. It was like a duplex, and I was playing in the backyard. It was a beautiful summer day, and I remember how picture perfect it was just because the clouds were out. It was just like, you know, the fluffy clouds and blue skies. And my grandmother was in the kitchen, and I was behind her sitting on the porch, and went out to play in the backyard. And I was out there. The birds were singing. It was just a classic bucolic Ohio day. And I looked up and I noticed that everything stopped. And when I say that, I mean that all sound stopped. There was no sound. The birds had stopped singing. It seemed like everything was in, I'm going to say, slow-mo, but there was no sound. And it was very, very quiet and a little eerie. And even though I was young, I recognized that this was weird and looked up and saw, the only way I can describe it is it looked like a satellite, kind of, but I didn't even know what that was at the time, but it looked like a round, kind of a silver ball with spikes coming out of it, like a 2 to 3 inch diameter, like shaft coming out of this ball. And at the end of that were what looked like to be about golf ball size, either orange or yellowish balls on those spikes. So it was just odd. It looked like something from space. That's the best way I can describe it. It was a low hum emanating from it, and it literally shot down right to where I was from the sky. And I just remember thinking, why am I the only one seeing this? And it came down right to my face and was humming, like this low hum, and I reached out to try and touch it, and it kind of pulled away, almost like a drone. That's the best way to describe it. Of course, back then, we really didn't have drones, to my knowledge. And this went on for a couple of times of me trying to touch it, and each time it would just go a little bit too far for me to get to it. And then finally, after sitting there for, I'm sure it was only a few minutes. To me, it seemed like a half an hour or so, but forever. It shot back up into the sky. And then, you know, everything like restarted. Like it just seemed like time stopped and then restarted. The birds were out again. The sun was shining. And my grandmother called me to come inside. I tried to tell her about it, and she didn't believe me. And then I told my parents, and they didn't believe me. They said I'd fallen asleep and I was dreaming. Fast forward to going to stay with my cousins and uncle in Dayton, Ohio. My uncle worked for Wright Pat. We're all in the back seat of a car. My two cousins are looking at a comic book, and I look over and I see something very similar and point to it and say, hey, I saw that in my grandmother's backyard. They all laugh. I'm like, no, it looked just like that. And it was like a picture of what I saw. And no one believed me in the car. They were all laughing, except for my uncle, who worked for Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and that's kind of something that you probably know about in that area. And he said, hey, stop laughing. He goes, Joni, I believe you. And I went, what? And my mom kind of looked at him. This is her brother, foster brother, but brother. And he said, no, I believe you completely. I'm really curious as to when this happened. And he really kind of grilled me about what had happened and validated my experience. So thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great day, and I really enjoy your podcast. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thanks, Joan. Yeah, I know Sunbury quite well. I have a good friend that actually grew up there, but he's never mentioned any strange objects falling from the sky. I think I would have remembered that. But enough about him. Let's talk about this strange encounter that Joan had back in the mid to late 60s. Now, based on the description of the object and its behavior, my initial guess is that it was some sort of probe sent from somewhere to observe and collect information. The thought of it flinching as Joan reached out to touch it, though, sounds like something straight out of Star Wars or something. It gives it a certain human persona. Anthropomorphism at its finest. But as odd and unusual as Joan's story may sound, believe it or not, something eerily similar had happened at least once before. And in that instance, the purpose of the spiked orbs outside the craft becomes terrifyingly evident. Consider the case of Robert Taylor, a Scottish forester whom in 1979 encountered something that would change his life forever.
Forestry worker Robert Taylor goes into the woods with his dog, looking for a suspected trespasser. But a short hike in, he discovers a strange spherical object.
You can see for the first time what this thing is. And it's a broadly circular-shaped object with a kind of rim around it. And he hears this strange noise that appears to be coming from inside this object. It's almost like banging noise. After the object started making these noises, two smaller objects seemed to emerge somehow and came out of the object. They had on them these kind of spikes. These two small objects come hurtling towards him across the ground. And as the spikes hit the ground, there was this kind of popping sound. Robert tried to run, but at that point, the two smaller objects basically attached themselves to his legs. The spikes were digging into his trousers. There's a kind of noxious odor that he smells, a really repugnant, acrid smell. He comes to believe that some noxious gas. Not only are these objects attached to his trousers, they're now dragging him back towards the main object. He's being attacked, and at that point, he passed out.
Now that clip courtesy of Quest TV and features the prominent UFO researcher, Nick Pope. Now Taylor was out cold for some 20 minutes. He believes that he was pulled inside the object. But when he awoke, the craft was gone. But he did notice a few strange markings in the area. Some scuff marks on the ground, indicating that something had been there. Now, disoriented, he stumbled his way out of the forest and into the world of UFO lore. Now, as for Joan's encounter, I think she was lucky that she wasn't taken by the object that she encountered. Either that, or she was lucky that she doesn't remember it. And as for the Wright-Patterson connection, there have long been rumors of reverse engineering of alien spacecraft and other nefarious research going on at that location. So much so that the base is a hangar specifically designated for this type of eeriness. They call it Hangar 18, and if the stories are to be believed, it's a place of nightmares, and also the place where both the wreckage and the supposed alien bodies from the Roswell crash were taken to, and some say reverse engineered. So that connection is not lost on me, nor is the uncle's interest in the story. But something tells me there's a whole lot more to this tale that even Joan herself doesn't know yet. And until those answers trickle in, the best we can do is thank her one last time for sharing the story. And that's going to do it for this episode. Monsters Among Us is written and produced by me, Derek Hayes. Copyright Red Crow Media. Additional support was provided by Sarah Carter Hayes and Delaney Bowers. Now be sure to follow us on social media. We have accounts at Instagram and Facebook. While you're at it, jump on over to YouTube and give us a like and follow. And I guess while you're on the web, please do what you can to leave us a rate and review at Spotify or Apple Podcast or anywhere they let you do that sort of thing. And finally, tonight's score was provided by Armchair Ambiance and Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. Now, I want to thank you all for tuning in. I know you have a choice when it comes to paranormal entertainment, and we truly appreciate that you chose us. I'll catch you all back here next week with a brand new installment. Until then, have yourself a good night. Now, tonight's secret entry is about a monster we already know exists. But does it get as big as they say it does? Please welcome this anonymous caller.
Hey, Derek. I came to know about your podcast from my son-in-law, who was a longtime listener and a binge listener, and I've been doing the same thing, actually, lately. He turned me on to I can't remember the episode number, but he turned me on the episode about the ginormous snake found in Latin America, South America. And I had something similar, actually. When I was in the military in South America, we had lots of reports about massive snakes, way bigger than the fossil records of normal snakes. You know, they say an anaconda can't get more than 29 feet or 28 feet, whatever. There are so many reports where there's way massive, bigger snakes than that. In fact, I think I actually saw one. I never got to measure the full length of it. But when we went back to the village, because they reported, that they called us on the radio and said, hey, there's a snake eating our village cow. And we had just been there doing a vet cap, which is a veterinary capability for these people, for the villagers, to take care of their animals, make sure everyone all the animals were healthy. Do the same thing with medical, for MedCap, for the people too. But anyway, they radioed us back and said, hey, there's a snake eating our village cow. So by the time we got back there, we had to take a Zodiac to get there. They'd already killed it and skinned it out. And the skin wasn't whole, so I couldn't measure the length. But the skin, the middle of the snake, the very middle of the snake was laid out on the ground. And it was the proper, you know, way it was positioned. And I measured it with my feet. My feet are about 12 inches long. And I walked across, toe to toe, across this snake skin. And it was 11 feet across. And that's around the middle. So I am pretty sure that snake could have eaten that cow and you and me and the rest of your household and mine easily. So that was a big one. The other story, I'll try and make this quick. The story was later on in 1998 when I was in Ecuador. We had to take ferries to get across these big, huge tributaries of the Amazon. And one of the ferry drivers said, yeah, I used to be in the Army. And he was telling a story about how he and his patrol in the deep Amazon had been attacked by this snake in the water. And their patrol was in a cayuca, which is a big, long, 50-foot-long canoe, okay? It's about 4 feet wide, looks like it has a shack on top of it. You've probably seen them before, and has a Evinrude, like a 75 or 100 horsepower Evinrude on the back. Anyway, they said this big old snake came starting to attack them, and they had like a 12-man squad in this canoe, in this cayuca. And he said they fired all the rounds at it. They were throwing grenades at it. They were just trying to get it away. And he said this guy was probably maybe 5'6", 5'7", not too big. But he says the snake's head was as big as his torso, really, really big. And he said the head of the snake was at the front of the canoe, and they could see the body trailing beside the canoe, and they could see the tail behind the 50-foot cayuca. And they said they finally, the last round, they shot the last round, but finally the last grenade that his lieutenant threw at the snake drove it off. It didn't kill it. It just drove the snake off from trying to kill them and trying to eat them. So, yeah, anyway, that's my story of giant snakes. I have many more stories, and I'm going to call back. So I love your podcast. I binge it every day while I'm working. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks, caller. No, I'm not one of those guys that's afraid of snakes. As long as I know where they are. It's when one suddenly appears that gives me a bit of a shock. But something tells me that if I saw one the size that our caller is referring to, well, shock wouldn't begin to describe it. So for his sake and ours, let's hope that snakes that size really did go extinct millions of years ago. Or at the very least, if they do still exist, they keep themselves down there in the jungle, a safe distance away. Thanks again, caller, for sharing that entry. Now, folks, it's that time of the evening where we go beyond. The after show found exclusively over at patreon.com. To join us, simply head there and search for Monsters Among Us podcast. Then sign up for the $5 level to get access to the rest of this episode and well over 100 more. And don't forget, if you're on a budget, you can at least get all these episodes ad-free for just $1 a month. And if you're super broke, Patreon now offers a 7-day free trial. So go, sign up, enjoy all you can in 7 days. Then go ahead and cancel. I don't mind. Because it's there that you'll hear content like this entry from Mary in the state of Kansas.
Hi, Derek. This is Mary from Kansas. I've had 2 ghost experiences in my life, and this is the first one. The house I grew up in was haunted. We lived in a 2-story farmhouse in the country, just outside of a small town in north central Kansas, from 1972 until 1985. The house was built in 1930. My parents...